Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor at the Cure Duchenne 2022 Futures Conference in Orlando, Florida. We're here with Deanna Tucker, Doctor of Pharmacy. She's Medical Science Liaison Team Leader at Sarepta Therapeutics based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Let's start by talking about Sarepta's program in Duchenne and its role in finding new therapies for the disease.
So we have three different programs for developing therapies for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. The first is our RNA platform, which designs exon-skipping therapies for patients. We have our first generation, which has produced three FDA-approved exon-skipping therapies for exons 45, 51, and 53. We are also developing a second generation or a next generation technology where we refer to that by the initials PPMO. What we've done is we've taken that exon-skipping molecule and we've added a peptide conjugate. And what that ultimately does is it gets into the muscle cell a little bit quicker. We hope that it is able to produce more dystrophin in a faster period of time. The other part is our gene therapy program, and we have a robust clinical development program. So far, we've had three phase 1/2 studies where we have dosed approximately 80 patients. We have a wide variety of patients that we have studied from the ages of 3 to 19 with different levels of ambulatory, if you will. We've also moved into phase 3 starting last fall. It's called the EMBARK trial, and it's currently enrolling in the U.S. and globally. And then later this year, we hope to be able to open our second phase 3 study, which we call ENVISION. And that study will enroll patients who are older than 8 years old that have a different level of ambulatory, and then we'll also include patients who are non-ambulatory in that study.
For the EMBARK study, what are the inclusion criteria?
I think the key inclusion criteria is that the age of the boys is ages 4 to less than 8, so as long as they haven't had their 8th birthday yet. We include mutations that are from 18 to all the way to 79. Now, the one exception that's in that 18 to 79 is exon 45. So we would exclude exon 45. And at this time, we're also excluding exons 1 to 17. Patients have to be on a daily stable dose of steroids. And we also have to make sure that they don't have too many antibodies. So we have to run that test prior to them getting the dose of gene therapy, because if you have too many antibodies, the body will keep it from going into the muscle cell.
Why is it that Duchenne is so difficult to treat using gene therapy? Well, we've seen so many advances with, for example, spinal muscular atrophy, hemophilia, and other diseases.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest parts is that the DMD gene is the largest gene in the human body, and the vector that we use, so it's basically our vehicle that gets that new gene into the body, is very small. Oftentimes I'll tell people it's like going on a very long trip and only being able to take a carry-on suitcase. You've got to take the most essential elements for your trip. So we have this tiny little suitcase that we have to put this big gene into. Because the gene is too large, we have to go through and figure out what is most essential in that gene that we can make and put into the vector. Like a disease like spinal muscle atrophy has a much, much smaller gene. And so some therapies with gene therapy, that gene is small enough, you can put the entire gene into that very small vehicle. With Duchenne, we're just not able to do that.
So at this conference, there are a number of pharmaceutical companies, all with their own approach to trying to cure Duchenne, Pfizer, PTC, et cetera. What distinguishes Sarepta's approach?
When we think about the construct for, and just so that everybody understands, when we say construct, we're talking about three essential components of gene therapy. We have the vector, which is our vehicle. Mm-hmm. We have inside that vehicle is what we call the promoter. That tells which cells we want the dystrophin protein to be. And then we have our transgene. All of the companies have different, slight differences there. And so while they're the same, there's a lot of things that are different, just minor changes in there.
And talking about the exclusion about antibodies, what percentage, as far as you know, of boys with Duchenne would be excluded from trials for this reason?
We recently did a seroprevalence study where we had 101 boys with Duchenne ages 4 to 18, and we looked at how many already have antibodies. And when we say positive for antibodies, what we're talking about is that they have a level of antibodies that is too high. And so when we did that study, we had 14% of boys who had antibody levels that were too high to be dosed at this time. And that's been very consistent with the literature.
Was this before COVID?
It was during COVID.
So is that likely to change as a result?
We don't anticipate it because, there's no data to suggest that having been exposed to COVID would, change your antibody status.
Right.
So, but we did that study during COVID.
Now, moving forward a bit, one of the biggest concerns for gene therapy is obviously the cost factor, the manufacturing factor, mm-hmm. as it will, of actually making the drug. Do you expect costs to come down?
And that's a very good question. I am really not, the expert in that field. From understanding, I've worked with companies where we had different types of medication that were developed. With gene therapy, it is very time intensive to develop enough of the vector, and then you've got to package in the gene. So the cost of goods to manufacture it is much higher than your traditional type of medications. And so that definitely plays into it. But how much the drug is going to be, I am not sure. Other gene mm-hmm. therapies that have been approved, Luxturna and Zolgensma, definitely tell us that it's probably going to be expensive. But what that actual number is, I'm not sure.
Now, here at this conference, you've interacted with a number of Duchenne parents. Mm-hmm. What's their attitudes towards gene therapy in general? Do you find that they're hopeful, or is this like holding out for something that, as far as they're concerned, may come too late for their own sons?
That is a very good question, because as you've even seen, whenever we see the patients and their families, we see them from all ages here. And, as we've talked about the inclusion criteria across a number of trials, they tend to center on the younger patients. Fortunately, many of us have developed protocols that's going to increase and allow for older non-ambulatory, because we still need to understand how we can modify their disease. I think parents have so much to think about whenever they see that their son is eligible for one of these trials. And so they have to really undergo a lot of understanding and trying to figure out what's really best for their son and their family. And I think the best thing is just to talk it over with their neuromuscular physician and help them understand what is going to be best for them, which yeah. ones they might qualify for. If they don't qualify for a trial now, what might be coming in the future that would open up a therapy for them?
Sure. I've interviewed parents whose sons just made it. One, in fact, I remember, made it into a trial the day before his 8th birthday.
Wow.
And if he had missed that trial, the parents would be heartbroken.
They sure would, which is really, welcome news that our next trial would enroll someone who turned 8 while they were waiting on one trial, because, and it's also based on, not only the age part, but what is their function. In order to make sure that you're seeing your drug effect or your therapy's effect, you have to have a group of participants that have similar levels of function. You can't have them all over the place, or it gets really hard to determine if your therapy has made a difference. So that's why we group our age categories, because they're likely to have function that's in the same category with each other.
And can you explain very quickly how you randomize what the role of placebo is here?
Yeah. So fortunately, with our current phase 3 trial, is we do a crossover design. So in the first year, we will have participants who will be randomized either to the therapy arm or to placebo. And then in year 2, they switch. So by the end of the second year, all of the participants will have received the gene therapy. And I think, you know, 1 year on placebo is plenty long enough. You know, we can't ask families to be on placebo any longer than that. Fortunately for some of our other trials, we have a much shorter placebo arm. But with the way the FDA is and being able to really show that therapy difference, that's the standard that we have to go with right now.
But the families don't know if their son is on placebo.
Right. Correct? Nobody knows. There's
even the investigators.
Not even the investigators. So whenever we say that a trial is blinded, randomized controlled, placebo controlled, blinded trial. So within the team that runs the study, there's a couple of people that are unblinded. At the study site, it will be the pharmacist who is unblinded, because when those participants come back for year 2,
they have to know
they
who
have
was
to
on
know
the drug.
What they got. Exactly. Yeah. And we have to check antibody status again to make sure nobody's seroconverted. Fortunately, that has not happened in our development program to date. But the unblinded pharmacist will be able to determine which therapy to assign the patient. We have a couple of other people that are unblinded from a safety standpoint, but those are not individuals that are caring for the patient. Everybody else, parents, physicians, physical therapists, the nurse, no one knows.
Last question, what's the timetable, not just for Sarepta, but in general? When do you think we'll actually see a gene therapy for Duchenne that works?
That's approved by the FDA. So right now we're currently enrolling our phase 3 EMBARK trial. Our first analysis will be 1 year after that last patient from year 1 comes in. So, you know, we hope to fully enroll that trial later this year, and then we've got to wait a year, and then we've got to analyze the data and then present it to the FDA. So that would put us in a 2024 timeline for potential approval with the FDA.
Good luck.
Thank
I hope
you
it
so
works
much.
Out. Thank you very much for this interview. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.